Hello, you're listening to the Brainy Speech Therapist podcast. We're your hosts, Helen McLean and Jan McIntosh Brown. Here, we aim to look at all aspects of brain injury, from the research to the rehabilitation, and always through the lens of speech and language therapy.
Hi, welcome to episode 10. This is Helen and Jan. We hope all our listeners are well. We're recording this intro just a few days before releasing the episode, although we recorded our interview with our guest quite a few weeks ago. It was early spring, I think, when we recorded with Lucy, and as we release this episode, Scotland is in the midst of some very warm weather, to put it mildly, so we hope that you're all managing to keep cool wherever you are.
Just a few words to introduce this episode on IRS meditation. We're joined by Fiona, who you will have heard speak about her own personal experiences of having a brain injury if you listened to the previous episode. She's found meditation to be helpful, and it was great to have her contribute to this episode. Our speaker, Lucy McIntosh, is an IRS practitioner, and she speaks about the background to this practice, as well as recording a session in the episode immediately following on from this one. That will be available to you if you want to try it out for yourself, and it will always be there for you in the future. We've also included links in the show notes to the IRest organisation and the Vimeo channel, so check those out too.
Hi everyone, this is Jan.
Hi, it's Helen.
Hi, it's Fiona here.
Yes, tonight we have a guest host, Fiona. Say hi again, Fiona.
Hi.
And we also have our guest speaker tonight is Lucy, all the way from New Zealand. But we'll find out more about that after this short message.
The opinions and views expressed in this podcast are of the individual and should not be considered professional advice. If you have a brain injury, suspect you have a brain injury, or think someone you know has a brain injury, please seek dedicated professional advice.
Hi everybody, as I say, we have a guest speaker, Lucy McIntosh, all the way from New Zealand. I am going to get Lucy to say hello in a moment and tell us a bit about herself. What we're going to be talking about tonight is IRest meditation. The reason that I love meditation with speech therapy is because when we're working with people with behavior, and I call communication behavior, it's often trying to help people think about what's happening within their bodies, mm-hmm. where they're feeling the tension that's impacting on their communication. And what I've found from learning a little bit about IRest is that IRest actually helps you with learning about your body and how you're feeling. So Lucy, before you get into IRest, will you tell us a little bit about you?
Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Lucy. I have spent most of my adult life working as a nurse, a registered nurse, both in Scotland and New Zealand. I gave up nursing through burnout a number of years ago, and I've always had an interest since I was about 20 in yoga, and so I've had quite an on-off relationship with it over the years. I did a yoga course for teacher training, and just after that, when I was returning back to my home in Gisborne from Auckland, I had a serious car crash where I had fallen asleep at the wheel and basically had quite a few broken bones in my chest. And after that, it took me quite a while to recover from those injuries, probably a good 18 months for the physical. Just had pain, and then but for the emotional and mental trauma that had occurred, it took a lot longer. Now I feel quite comfortable to be in a car heading out of town. I just didn't seem to pick up very well, and it became quite apparent that my burnout that I thought was just from nursing was actually something that had been building up for probably most of my life. So I started having serious flashbacks about episodes in my life and became terrified of going to sleep at night, and just went and got some help from a counsellor. Eventually, the counsellor and I parted ways because we both felt that me going along and just complaining about my life for an hour every fortnight just really wasn't going to do anybody any good. During my yoga training, I had been asked to give a presentation on a limb of yoga, which is called Pratyahara. You don't need to remember that. Where it's about the withdrawal of the senses and preparing for meditation. During that research for giving that talk, I had come across there's two forms of yoga nidra, which is the sleep of the yogi. One was the classical one out of India, and another one was from a clinical psychologist in America. So I gave my talk on it, and it was years later, during this, after the counselling had finished, that I went, well, okay, so nothing can help me. I'm just going to be left screaming lunatic, hitting my head off the wall, punching my head because I felt like my brain just didn't work anymore. And suddenly remembered about eye rest meditation. And then I've had a journey with that where I have been working on my self, just learning about my body and my brain and meditation and how it's helped me.
Right, Fiona, you want to ask the question?
Sure, that sounds really harrowing. I'm so sorry that happened to you. Very insightful and, you know, what you're talking about change of life and, you know, things like that, and how meditation helps with the kind of self-destruction, things like that. That sounds horrible, but it sounds like you've really come out of the other end, like, with a really proactive kind of, do you know what I mean? You're really doing something about it. That's quite very admirable. No, I would love to hear more about iRest because I've never heard of it before, and it sounds very interesting. It sounds like something that might be useful for myself.
Okay. Thanks, Fiona. And yes, it was quite a journey, and the journey continues for all of us in life. But so iRest is a form of meditation. It is based on ancient meditation principles of non-dualist spirituality, but it really gets its nuts and bolts out of clinical psychology and research. Back in the 2000s, it was beginning to be discovered that the brain wasn't, what you had in your brain wasn't necessarily what you would always have in your brain, that the brain actually has some neuroplasticity to it. So that means that neurons that fire together wire together, so we can actually learn and ways to help ourselves, and that the brain can be helped along that.
That's fine. I just thought, and that's what rehab's all about, isn't it? I mean, in your experience, Fiona.
Yeah.
You had to learn things.
Yeah, I had the hypoxic brain injury, and so I was out of oxygen for 32 minutes. So I had the plasticity, or whatever, it swelled, swole up and then it had to kind of come down again. And so that was, my ankle's still here. So it's been great to be here, but really trying to find your place and trying to not be, give yourself so much of a hard time about every, I feel quite a wee bit of empathy from you, you know, when you talk about punching your head and trying to, you know, make it work properly. I really relate to that. That's quite a common thing because you just can't get the message across, you know.
I rest meditation is a form. It has 10 steps, and these steps are tools that we can actually take into our everyday life. Mm-hmm. You learn them while lying down or sitting in a chair very comfortably, and the meditation is guided all the way with pauses just for you to become more aware of what's happening in your body. There's the first stage is, I like to start with the inner resource first, which is it's about finding refuge within yourself, you know, a place of sanctuary where you feel safe. When I first started doing this form of meditation, I found that I had no anchor, no safety zone. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't have anything that made me feel safe. I didn't feel like I'd ever really been safe, that there was nobody that made me feel safe. And so the man whose voice was on the recording, Richard Miller, which is the clinical psychologist who has developed this over 40, 50 years since he, in the 70s, he first came across yoga nidra. And so I used his voice. Just his voice made me feel safe, mm-hmm. because he said that this would help me. And so, you know, through the books that I'd read, and so I just believed them. I took him at that this was going to help. So I used his voice as my inner resource, and just began to settle into the form of meditation.
It certainly sounds, if you don't mind me asking, comment, Lucy, like your kind of the journey that you went on there, it certainly doesn't sound like it was an easy thing for you to start, even when you knew that you needed to return to yoga nidra, to eye rest. And I wonder if you find that as a practitioner, maybe helping other people, do people find it difficult to get into the zone, I suppose, and to open themselves up to it?
Yes, and I think, you know, I probably repeat this at the end, and I think that that's the real takeaway, is that it's a slow, progressive, but it's very gentle form of meditation. Mm. That the meditation guides you through how you would begin to find your inner resource. You know, that people sometimes use their favorite pets. They might use a loved one. They might use a memory from the past where they had a really, you know, they just felt really nice. Some people think of, you know, sitting at the pool, you know, your best holiday, you know, just something that, and everyone's individual. Mm-hmm. About what it is that they use to enter that zone. Mm. Now, the inner resource is about just learning what makes you feel most secure and safe. And then how does that feel? What is the real feeling of feeling safe and secure? And where do you feel that within your body? You know, which part of your body gives you that feeling? So yes, it is something that does take time for people. I would say that some people can just get that picture immediately, yeah. And or the smell, or that it might be a good meal, it might be, you know, it's open to a wide interpretation, mm-hmm. of what makes somebody comfortable. Mm-hmm. And that's why iRest was really developed, was because the clinical psychologist, Richard Miller, found that in his dealings and treatment of clients, that the classical yoga nidra didn't seem to work so well with them, because that takes people on a journey where suggestions are made. And that's okay for, you know, for people who maybe haven't experienced trauma. They, you know, they're just, you know, these bright, breezy people who can be taken. They just want to meditate because they know it feels good for them. But another people want to meditate because they kind of feel like, you know, there's something really going on. They've lost their anchor, they've ground, you know, they're just sort of flying around. I don't know, like when I taught a group of people, I used to call myself like the nuclear tomato. It just felt like I was just exploding everywhere in my life. And for me, the more classical one, and I tried that, didn't work, because you got taken on a journey where you had to follow their instructions.
I think that's quite, so, I think that's amazing, because usually I've never heard anything like that before. Someone that's so focused on, like, maybe using an item in order to do that, and also I've never really thought about the pathways, you know. And you do, to me, I've always done meditation, and it's always been body based, you know, you're focusing on breath or body, or, you know, and you, I've never really thought about why, you know, what's going on there. Obviously, it's happening, but that's quite interesting.
Yeah, so the inner resource is so that if you, as the meditation goes on, you're asked to, you know, sense your body, sense your breath, and then it goes on to more of examining feelings and emotions and beliefs that you hold about yourself. Now, during those parts, or during all parts, really, there, if you have got underlying tension and, you know, discord within yourself, and you've maybe got PTSD, and, you know, there's traumatic memories and experiences for you, then these might begin to bubble up in time, because if you've quelled them all down in your body and you've got them so deep down in there, and only your brain is reactive to, you know, causing you ab reactions of, you know, disassociating from your experiences, or you're outbursting and being violent and aggressive because of your experiences.
So, like a sort of fight and flight, like a flight and flight response.
Yes. And so they're more
working on the
emotional detachment. Yeah. Yes. So they come out of there. There are really primal elements of the way that humans work, our brains work, because they're there. Those reactions are inbuilt. They're primal. They're part of our brain, and they're there to keep us safe. So, you know, so the first one is like, you know, where you your body, if you've had this very profound, scary, frightening experience, that you might freeze or play dead, because that's how, you know, people leave you, you know, they walk past you, oh, you're, you know, you're dead, whatever. But you're, so that's our super primal one. And then the next level of that is the fight or flight. Now, these things set off chemical reactions in our body, and they're just, if they get activated time and time and time again, then they become more difficult to dissipate that chemical reaction within your body. And so it's completely understandable that people have these reactions or ab reactions, and there's nothing really, I mean, there is, we feel like there's something wrong, but there's kind of, at the same time, it is the way that our body works to protect us, because we've just entered into a zone of, that's too much for me. My brain doesn't even know what to do with that, and it's freaking me out, and it reminds me of something that I don't even kind of know what it reminds me of. And so if you've built up a really good, solid inner resource, that if something just, you know, loosens a little bit during the meditation about observing emotions and your thoughts, then you can come back at any point during the meditation to this inner resource, this little place of safety for yourself, you know. And so it's just about having a little key word or a key image that you can return to if you're just, you know, it is about helping us. Now, it can be so slow, the change through using iRest, that it might be in time that you realize, you know, further down the track, that your reactions are kind of changing to situations that maybe before you just were, you know, like myself, a nuclear tomato, just blowing up and exploding. And so it actually becomes quite, I wouldn't say fun, but it just becomes like, oh, really? I can remember that that used to send me absolutely berserk. Mm, and now it's just, you know,
it's like almost kind of unlearning, yeah. Unlearning this learned behaviour that was really destructive, that kind of to unlearn it, remove it. Yeah,
yes, it is a kind of unlearning, but it's more, rather than an unlearning, what would I say? It's more like just a progression of one, the chemicals really just finally settling down in the body, and just a sort of an opening up and more acceptance and of life and self-compassion. It develops our self-compassion that we're okay, you know. And that everything that has been okay, because it came out of extreme events that caused our brains to go, okay, I'm not quite sure what to do about this. So it goes through. So the inner resource for me is the most important. It's the one that really helped me.
It's so interesting, then, Lucy, because I think in terms of seeing our brain injury patients, I feel like so many of the people I see, and Fiona, maybe you feel this, that they've kind of lost trust in their own bodies and their own brain, you know, it's let them down so terribly. But from what you're saying, it sounds like this is a really good way for someone to reconnect to themselves and to learn to trust their brain and their body again, and to find that kind of inner resource that you're talking about, to feel like actually it's okay. It sounds like a really lovely way to get someone to start moving forward from that perspective.
So there's so you have your inner resource, then you set like maybe an intention for practicing, you know, like I practice, as to be in the present tense, I practice I rest every day, or, you know, something else that you might want to work on in life. I feel joy, you know, it can be, you can work it up. It does teach you how to do that as well. And then a heartfelt desire, which is about something that you feel like is your life goal, something that you want to accomplish in life. You feel like it's it might just actually be, I am a loving mother. It can be just something so simple to something quite profound, because we're all so different. And these intentions and heartfelt desire, they come up from within. Nobody can tell you. It comes from you, from within. And it doesn't matter if you don't have them at the start, they develop as you develop your meditation, your focus and concentration. They just start to bubble up. Body sensing and breath sensing just helps you to be aware of what's going on in your body, that you actually breathe without having to even think about it, and just knowing whether your breath is tense or calm or deep or shallow can help you just go, oh, okay, you become more aware of your breath during the day. And then I've already sort of mentioned about the emotions and beliefs, and they work on the opposites of the fact that your brain can't do sort of two things at one time. which takes me into actually the real neuroscience behind meditation, which is a number of years ago, a group of researchers, with the lead one being Brewer in 2011, they did MRI scans with people who were meditators and people, you know, and other groups of people, where they discovered that if under MRI, if they asked them to do nothing, then they seemed to sit within this network of neurons, which is called the default mode network, which is, it gives us our sense of being an individual. It gives us our I, me, mine. So that's really good, because we wouldn't be able to communicate with each other or have relationships if we didn't actually know that we are an individual. And but it's also the place where our negative bias sits, and that's the bit that helps us determine whether our environment or situation is dangerous to us. And that's a good thing as well. And it gives us our, you know, the little ticker tape of thought that goes on in your mind. They call it recursive thinking. And so you can either be positive, or a lot, most of us are fairly negative. And that's what sort of, it's like the whipping stick almost, isn't it? That makes you feel really bad about yourself and your efforts in life and everything like that. They also found that there was another network called the dorsal attention mode network, which was the focusing of attention. When you focus on doing a task, you tend to move into those sets of neurons. And they help us with concentration and attention, and they help us plan and, you know, strategies. And but when we stop doing our tasks, we go back into our default network. Now, they asked people to start meditating, and what they found was that people went into this present-centered default mode network. Now, that's where you get the reduction of the autobiographical self. The default network gets deactivated. Sorry, Fiona, if this is just a bit... what's all this?
No, I'm just...
But it stops us having this negative thinking, and our stress and anxiety and fear. It's sort of almost as if it just dissipates, because we've moved into this present center, which network, which gives us feelings of well-being. We might have an aha moment, and it gives us the sense of being inclusive, that the sense of self just drops away, not in a scary way, but just we feel like we're part of something a lot bigger, that there is no separation between us and others. And so that's quite a nice place to be in. Of course, we can't actually stay in that all day, because, you know, we do actually have to go out, and we do have to communicate and be an individual. And so we do have to use our other networks. But spending time daily in the present-centered network allows us to just be a lot more fluid and a lot more accepting, open-minded. Our sense of not having enemies out in the world, that paranoia can lessen down. We more innate joy within ourselves, self-compassion, self-love. It's certainly worth trying. It takes time. It's not a magic wand. It does take practice. You'll find that when sitting in this zone, you know, whether it's just once a day, The tools that you can learn, you can take into your life. So if I was to say, for the three of you, just for a moment, quick little experiment, just see if you can bring your attention into your right hand. Just see if you can feel your right hand. See if you can any warmth, tingling. Just be with the sensation that you can feel in your right hand. And then move your attention over into your left hand and what you feel there. Any tingling, warmth, sensation. And then bring attention into both of your hands at the same time. Just feel both hands, any tingling or sensation, warmth. And then just see how that felt for any of you. Anyone would like to share any experience there?
I think it's interesting how quickly you can focus in on one part of your body, but also notice a change from one side of your body to the other. So, for example, I could feel more tingling in my right hand, but my left hand felt a little bit warmer. And then to hold both of those sensations at the same time is an interesting thing. But I have to say, automatically felt much more relaxed even in the space of those few seconds.
Yeah, lighter and a bit more space.
And so it, and the tools that you IRES teaches you of being with your body or being with your breath or, you know, feeling both hands at the same time. I used to tell my children, just say, "Mom, can you feel both hands?" It's like, oh, okay. I need to, I'm getting a little bit touchy here then. And so I'd just quickly like to mention, there's been a bit of research done, both, pilot studies really. One was done using iRest, which they had some problems with retention and they didn't have support, you know, good support. It was done, it was a Hopkins approved study, but they had come up with that, yes, it did have interesting things that a bigger study, more supported study could actually, it would be interesting to see how it does go for people with acquired brain injury. And I've also had a look around and there's been a few others, 2003 by Bedard, 2012 again by the same person, and 2013, just pilot studies on not iRest, but other forms of mindfulness-based therapy. And all of them seem to say that, it would be worth pursuing, treatment programs and further research to see just how well it can work. So if there's anyone out there that's really interested in research, then, you could get in touch with the iRest Institute in San Francisco, which is iRest.org. And I'm sure they would be able to help you, to anyone who's listening, help you find a iRest teacher. And they also have a set iRest meditation and a course that is so that it's under rigorous, it's a rigorous study so that the meditation doesn't change, so that no matter who does the research, because that way it's a standard. So just popping that out there for anybody that's clinical and listening to this and going, oh, I'd like to do a research study.
Yeah, well, we always like to get an onward link, something to go in and have a look at. I think it's really interesting. I can't remember who the paper was. It was a good couple of years ago. I'd read something about different types of meditation after brain injury and the benefits of it. So, for example, a mantra-based meditation will target one thing versus maybe a visualization technique will target something else. I think it's something that's really interesting, but is maybe underutilized, certainly in my neck of the woods. Maybe other areas are a bit more progressive, but I think it's such an interesting area to explore, and just with the general growth of things like yoga, meditation, tai chi, etc., people are becoming more open to it, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, I know, Helen, we do use meditation, not iRest, which is, you know, I'd love to be able to use iRest, but we do use just a meditation app for people that I work with. I've seen people be, you know, people with, you know, very severe aphasia just absolutely loving meditation, you know, and just trying to help them, you know, to have some time out of language, you know, even although it's language based, I think it's still the concept of it just seems to go underneath all the language, you know. So yeah. Fiona, I know you talked about being encouraged to do meditation in your rehab, but that you'd only just started using it. Would you talk quickly to us about
I had meditation. My experience with meditation first was when I was a bit of a burnout at work, and I ended up with crippled migraines and things like that, and I ended up going to the Priory and having all sorts of treatments and therapies, and one of them was obviously the meditation, and it was just so beneficial, and it changed how I felt physically, and it did the job for me. But more recently, when I was in rehab, there was guided meditation, and there was different ones. Some of them were like take you to a place and visualize it, you know, things like that. But mostly it was kind of guided breath and mindful meditation. There was loads of that as well, and that really was wonderful because I have a kind of chaos, you know, the energy around about me is chaos, and I have to focus in, you know, and stop the madness almost, and the meditation is fantastic. And so obviously I know the things that are good for me, and it's all, I don't know why, but I've always been like that, that the things that are best for me I do last, you know. I do all the tasks, I do all the jobs, I do the lists, I do the, then I've organized everything and I cleaned up, you know, that's just how I've always been, kind of thing. And so then when only just recently, obviously lockdowns changed things, and I've been able to, I've got separate tools to deal with my mental health, and actually make sure I have a book that I've got, I write down like the exercise that I do, I write down the reflections of the day and things like that. And this is only really the last year or so, and I'm doing it religiously, and it's changed everything. It's changed my body. I find myself in a situation where physically I'm just kind of moving up, you know, I'm just shaking with kind of anxiety for no reason. I just kind of build up this momentum of stress and things like that. And so obviously just recently I've recognised how important it is, and I've always allowed myself to have that time to self-soothe and just clear my head and prepare myself for whatever it is that I'm going to do next. And so I've really, it's been an incredible thing for me. I've got different things that I use, you know, YouTube. I love Scotland and I love the change in the seasons. And I like to meditate on that, on the sunrise, on the spring, on the, you know, that I really, that to me, nature and things like that, that's nourishing to me. And so therefore I'm quite spiritual in that way as well. And so it's, I love to get there, to be there, you know, in that wee zone. And so I've been doing it a lot, more regularly now, every single day at least 10 to 15 minutes. And I change it around, you know, so I'm not expecting what's going to happen. It's fantastic. I've never really thought about what's going on in my brain, what it's going on, because to me it's always been the body that I've, you know, my body relaxing and the anxiety going away. And so that eye rest is, so it seems to be a wee bit more tailored, a wee bit more guided. I don't know, it's a little more guided or something like that.
Don't feel that what you've been doing isn't amazing, because as Jan was saying about what they do about, you know, the behavior, the communication, about feelings, the impact on communication, that it sounds like the meditation that you've been doing has been helps you get into your body and feel what's going on. You've got a lot of awareness there, and so it doesn't really, you know, eye rest is one form, but it's not the only form, you know, that it does have great tools, but I'd say that the most important thing for anybody who's thinking about meditating is about one that does help you get into your body, to be with your breath, to be with your sensations. They call it, you know, a somatic, you know, feeling what your body feels, and being able to sit with it. So, good on you, Fiona. Sounds amazing.
Just now, but I was really stilted in my speech and things like that. You know, night and day from how it was when I had my brain injury 5 years ago. And so I struggle to find words still and things like that. And so anything at all that can be done to just remove my anxiety levels in any way, whether it's a wee 10 minutes or whatever, I can just deal with things. I can speak a wee bit more fluently and get what I need to say out without panicking. Because I start to panic and then I get myself in a loop of confusion, and then I go, so that's really where my head goes. And so the more the better, the more the merrier for me. That's it's nice.
Okay, so
yeah, no,
so sorry, yeah. I hate to bring this chatter to a close, but it is getting very close to time, so
okay,
Helen, do you want to ask the final big question?
Yeah, so Lucy, you've had a little bit of time hopefully to think about this, but we ask everyone, what would be one thing that you would like listeners to this episode to take away about eye rest, about meditation, something along those lines? What would you want people to think about, to take away?
I feel that a good takeaway is that eye rest does actually help people. It has helped numerous amounts of people all over the world, and give it a go. There is a Eye Rest Institute's channel on Vimeo that has tons of different types of eye rest meditations, and not just the one that they use in research. And I think that Jan has used a couple of them, and give it a go. See what you like, and if you do like it, keep at it, little and often.
That's a good take home message. Yeah, and we'll put links to the organizations, to the channels and things in the show notes so people can find them easily. That's great. Thanks very much for that, Lucy.
Okay.
That was really, really interesting to hear about.
Hi, we hope you found Lucy's information on eye rest interesting. We wanted to have a session on eye rest because personally I often use guided meditation in rehab. I feel it supports the work that I do with social communication, so working with someone to support them being aware of their thoughts and feelings and how those things impact on their bodies, their behaviour and their communication. and then supporting them to be able to choose how to respond to those thoughts and feelings. I have found in my time that there aren't many people who have much experience of meditation, so it can be a little bit of an interesting idea for them to start engaging with it. However, I have been very surprised in my 10 years working with adults with brain injuries on the different backgrounds of people who actually appreciate it and engage with it and benefit from it. So, you know, give it a go with some of your people and you may reap the benefits.
That's a really interesting point, Jan, because I would say personally, I really enjoy practicing meditation, but I'm not sure I've really kind of introduced it to my patients and not from a social or cognitive communication point of view. But I do think it's interesting and listening back to Lucy's conversation and explanation about eye rest. And just we touched on it around the linking between cognition, between our emotions and our behaviour. And I know that you've often said, and I agree with you, you know, behaviour and communication, they're often one and the same thing, really. But how we can communicate what we're thinking and what we're feeling, making that come out in terms of our behaviour, sometimes that's a positive thing or a negative thing. So I'm thinking of people maybe who have got quite pressured speech, or people who have difficulty seeing things from someone else's perspective after their brain injury. Actually, I find quite often that can come from a place of just feeling frustrated or feeling anxious about a situation. And it just made me think that perhaps there's a lot more patients who could benefit from some form of meditation, whether it's eye rest or something else, that might help actually alleviate some of their anxieties and in turn help their pressured speech, because they're able to then organise their thoughts a little bit more clearly. And that was the thing I think Fiona mentioned about, she just found it helped her give a bit more space in her mind and can influence how she copes with a whole range of situations. And I would like that feeling that we mentioned in the episodes around it as a tool to give us more space. And that, I think, is whether you're someone with a brain injury, someone helping look after someone with a brain injury, but also if you're, you know, a member of staff. And again, you know, we're 18 months or so into the COVID pandemic, aren't we? And there's lots of stressed staff out there in all range of backgrounds. So anything that can help people have a little bit of time out from the thinking mind and focus in on themselves has got to be a good thing, hasn't it?
Yeah. And so, yes, a great big thank you to Lucy for donating her time to talk to us about this and then recording an IRS session for us. And well done to Fiona for coming back on as a guest host. Hearing her reflections on the benefit of her using meditation was really interesting, and her talking about how she's connecting back to herself. Perhaps it might inspire others to give these things a go. So keep an open mind and have a listen to the next episode, which is the actual IRS session. Thanks, everybody. Bye for now.